With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today I sit down with Jimmy from Foals. You're in for a treat. Jimmy's such a nice guy. We had a real good time having this chat. I've literally just pressed stop on the interview, so I'm still buzzing from my chat. Obviously Foals got new music out at the moment. Go check it out as soon as this episode's finished. What a band they are. We talk about Foals, obviously, throughout this podcast and all the usual stuff that you like about Off the Beaten Track. You know, we have a real deep dive into the songs that really have mattered to Jimmy. Before we get on with the chat, a few thank yous. Thanks to Scroobius Pip, everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Tom Dark for sorting this out. Really appreciate that, Tom. Big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast, and the biggest thanks always go to you lot for just being bloody lovely and continuing to support this podcast. There's loads more great episodes coming in the future. I've recorded loads, so you've got some real great natters coming your way soon. And if you can't be bothered to wait for them, then look backwards, because there's 400 episodes of this podcast you can listen to for free. And if you like your guitar, indie, you know, pop, then go check out my chats with Jeremy from Everything, who's done work with Foals previously. You can hear me chatting to Sway, to Idols, to Sleaford Mods. Gosh, and then if you want your big rock and rollers, Tommy Lee from Motley Crue, Foo Fighters, and we talk about... We talked briefly about stand-up comedians on here. If you like that, then go check out my chats with James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Maisie Adam, Jade Adams. There's bundles. And producers, you can hear me talking to Fatboy Slim, to Butch Vig. I always rattle off the same names every time I do this little segment, but... like I say, there's 400 episodes, so, you know, I guarantee you'll find someone in there that you love. Public Enemy, that's a great, great interview with Chuck D. I definitely recommend that. And also, lots of actors. Really proud of the conversation I had with Maxine Peake. That's one of my favourite of her episodes. I'd definitely say go check that one out. She's absolutely wonderful. And, you know, actors like Michael Smiley, Amanda Abington, Joe Hartley, Thomas Turgoose. I've had loads of the people from the Shane Meadows films because they're just fucking amazing. So why wouldn't you want to speak to people that have been involved in the experiences of being on set, making some of them amazing pieces of art? Okay, that's enough kind of waffle from what you can get for free. If you'd like to support the podcast and you can spare $1 a month, 70-odd p, is that... then you can access loads of radio shows. You can watch all the episodes. You can watch all the video episodes. Essentially, you're supporting the podcast, and it's $1 a month, and that's over on my Patreon, which is Patreon, patreon.com/ Off the Beat and Track. So, yeah, if you can support us over there, it'll cost you, $1 for a month, and that's get access to hundreds of episodes and loads of weekly content as well. Right, I think we're all done. I think we could just get on with what you're here for. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Jimmy of Foals. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beaten Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The cacao bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Jimmy, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm radiant and glowing, actually. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. How was the bank holiday?
Busy for us. We did a show every night of the bank holiday in London.
Oh,
we did four in a row from Friday.
Oh, well, you're looking good on it, mate.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a bit tired, but it was all right, you know. It wasn't too shabby. I reckon we could have done more.
Mm. Okay. Well, look, before we get onto the playlist, I always like to just ask guests to cast their mind back a few months and just to talk about the weird couple of years that the touring stopped and the kind of interaction stopped and literally the world stopped. I just want to know how that period of time, how that affected you both personally and creatively.
Well, personally, it was a bit of a sort of up and down win and lose battle. because I've got my girlfriend lives in California, so I've got like this long distance relationship, which had just basically started the year before COVID. But anyway, it turned out I made a good decision. But we tried to tour Asia when it was kicking off in March, I don't know, 2020, I think it was. So that was a bad idea. So we ended got as far as the Philippines. We played one show in Singapore, which was a disaster because it was like everyone was really scared about the pandemic. So people were just bailing left, right and center. Anyway, and then, I flew over to California and then I got locked down with her for 7 months and that, which was great. And then I flew back here to start writing the new album and then got locked down here for a year. So I didn't see her for a year. So that was kind of a weird nightmarish. It was just like, well, it was like everyone was experiencing just this sort of repetitive nightmare nature, you know. It was like Groundhog Day where it was just miserable every day. But I will say, like, so that was sort of, I think everybody felt like that. And I'm sure everyone had to say it had something that was pretty awful they had to go through, you know.
Yeah, totally.
But I did make a lot of music. And, you know, I guess, like, lots of solitude was quite good for me, actually. It turns out I'm not that social.
So in regards to writing, like, some of the new record, was that written sort of remotely, or did you just get into the studios quite quickly? Or
yeah, some of them are written remotely. Like Looking High, I started that one. That was written remotely, and same with Yanis. He had a few. We kind of brought like a few things together.
Yeah,
but quite a few of the tunes were written on the spot, which was cool.
Yeah,
which I think gives it a kind of good energy. It doesn't have too much baggage. It's quite light.
Yeah.
I feel like normally we're dragging like suitcases of old songs and riffs and God knows what from like years, you know, we're just still desperate to put them in something. It's all like the unwanted children. But anyway,
All right. Well, look, let's kick off the playlist and I'm going to ask you for track one, please. Can you tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please?
Well, I don't know if it's the greatest ever intro, but certainly when I was a kid, I remember my dad listening to Money for Nothing by Dire Straits. And, yeah, I don't really know about... I kind of got quickly bored of the rest of the song, you know, I think. But the intro, it's like I remember it in, like, my dad's car, the stereo. It was a bit like... It reminded me of... they used to do in cinemas the THX, like, surround sound thing, which was just, like, kind of like terrifying when you're a kid.
Mm.
So it was a bit like that. I found it a bit scary. Like the drums are like enormous. Anyway, I think it's like a pretty sick intro. You know, it goes into like some hardcore Dire Straits.
It does.
But, you know, I like it. I like the intro a lot.
It's so... The production couldn't be any more 80s if it tried, could it? It's just everything's cranked to 11, isn't it?
And yeah, I know. I think that's what's kind of fun about it. It's just like the pinnacle of like studio excess in a sense.
Totally. But you do get... I mean, before it kind of just goes into full-on Dire Straits, you've got the obviously the big Sting vocal at the beginning and
exactly. That's wicked, that bit.
Yeah, and that mad little sort of big drum rolls. But then you do get the money shot, don't you? You do get that little riff where it all just drops out and you just get that little clean riff for like, I don't know, however many bars. But that is a nice little payoff, isn't it?
Well, it's cool. Also, I don't like, maybe it's one of the first songs that did that. Mm. Like, you know, like, I guess, yeah, it's like, you know, doing this enormous build up into something absolutely tiny.
Yeah.
But it's so satisfying. You know, that's really cool. It's really hard to do that. Mm. Yeah. Nowadays, I'd probably like it to be like a massive bass line or something. Yeah. That's what it would be these days.
Well, it's interesting because I want to ask you this then. And when you approach songwriting, and the band approach songwriting and essentially the intro, like, because I imagine if most bands were to take Money for Nothing to a label now, you'd get laughed out the door by just saying, look, you can't have 3 minutes of this before that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so
definitely.
I just wonder, with the kind of changes in how people listen and attention spans getting shorter and such, like, how much of that filters through into the songwriting process and essentially the intro with Foals?
Well, yeah, I mean, it does. It's more and more, actually. It's like, I wish they'd just stop with it. It seems so anti-productive and counterintuitive for like a record industry to be like just making everything so short.
100%.
Like, they're just sort of getting rid of like minutes and minutes and minutes of creativity. It's like, why? It's like, what's the end? Why? It's like, I don't get it. Anyway, they're hell bent on it.
Mm.
And it's always, you know, it's just getting shorter and shorter. So I'd love to do a little graph of when we started like 17 years ago, like how long you were allowed to have.
Yeah.
It's probably like around 4 minutes. And now I think if you go into, or like 5 minutes maybe was like an extraordinary long single, but you could still do it. And then it's like nowadays, it's like 3 minutes is pretty, it's considered too long.
Which is ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's stupid. It's just stupid. I hate it. It's just dumbing everything down. It's just like, it's like turning everything into like just children's television. It sucks. It's like, where's the, get rid of all the art. It's like, I feel like there's a sort of anti sort of art movement at the moment. I don't know. It's an undercurrent where it's just like, oh God. Anyway, but we try and keep that off as much as possible. We love intros and we love stretching stuff out, which if you ever see us live, you'll see us do that. You know, you'll know if there's a song that's longer, that was probably its original length, and it got chopped down because the label said you need to lose blah blah minutes off this to fit it onto one record. You know, that was a thing actually on this one. It was to fit it onto one vinyl.
Yeah.
And then we were like, we were against it obviously, and then we were like, well, actually hang on, because like with the coming out of a pandemic, like no one's gonna have any money, and it's just gonna be like, why not? What, you know, the difference between like, I don't know, like, I actually don't know how much like a single record would be these days, like 20 quid probably.
No, I would say like 20 quid, yeah.
20 quid and then like 30 quid being like the gatefold or something. And it's like, that difference is massive.
Mm.
And it's like, so that, you know, those kind of decisions I think are well informed. But usually the editing happens right at the end. Like we leave it and we don't really do it. We leave it to like whoever's mixing or like, you know, we're like, can you please just like, just edit it in a tasteful way, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've done well. We've done well with that so far, I feel like.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, hearing the new music, it definitely, to me, as somebody that's followed your career throughout, this definitely feels like more poppy than previous stuff that I've heard. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but it's not a dirty word, pop.
No, not at all. But I want to sort of play devil's advocate with what we've just spoke about and saying how sort of taking the art out of music by shortening it. Do you also think that there is a real kind of art in being able to craft a 2.5 minute perfect pop record.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's like what we're after a little bit. Yeah. I've always said that, and we've always thought that. It's like, yeah, it's like, and also having both, like trying to,
yeah,
you can have both. I don't get why everyone doesn't do that. It's like, it's crazy. It's just, you can both feed the other, and it's like, yeah, it's the ultimate goal, isn't it? Yeah. They're out there, you know. There's like, you know, like Naive Melody, Talking Heads have got quite a few of them. There's so many, you know. That's just one little, you know, the idea of like a perfectly, like Dancing Queen, for example, would be my sort of holy grail.
Yeah, that's an intro. Like,
yeah, that's an intro, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect. It's just flipping perfect. Yeah. Listen to that song and be like, there's absolutely nothing I would do to that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and that's sort of, well, but, you know, it's fun doing that. And that's what this album is a little bit, I guess.
That's the holy grail, isn't it? If you've got them songs that you've just played hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, and every time you hear it, you just think, there's nothing I can add to that. There's nothing I could. There's no gaps. There's nothing.
It.
And that is rare, isn't it, to be able to get that?
I love it. There was one I heard the other day. I can't remember what it was now, but it was perfect. It's just like, I just cannot think of anything to do better to that.
Yeah. Love it.
Which is, and I think, you know, you do feel that in the studio. Not that we've ever seen, but like, I'm sure that must be amazing. It's like, you hear stories, like recording Dancing Queen, you hear stories of like the girls coming in to do the vocals, and like the guys had already done like rough vocals, sort of, you know, guide vocals, and they were just like crying, basically. They were like, oh my God, like, you know, like, this is gonna last forever. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, look, we're talking about older records, so let's get some nostalgia flowing here. For track two, Jimmy, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please, mate.
Well, that's Every Day by Buddy Holly. Definitely, beauty, I'd say. It's a real beauty, and it's just like, I mean, that's a perfect song, I would say. You know, and it's so simple, and it's just like, I don't know. It reminds me of, again, like being in like the back of one of my parents' cars, just like, and it just like, I don't know, just like, sounds a bit like a lullaby.
Yeah.
You know, and it's beautiful. It's so tender, and I don't know, it's full of meaning as well. It's like, but everybody can associate with the lyrics. It's just amazing. Yeah. And it's just like, the fact that I could listen to it when I was like 2 years old and I could listen to it now and it's have the same impact, you know, and also there's no drums. It's just someone clapping. Yeah. I just like, I always forget that. And every time I hear it, I'm like, that's amazing. Like how many other songs is that just, and it's enough.
Yeah.
You know,
what's the emotion?
It's like a perfect little ecosystem, that song.
That's a lovely way to describe it.
You know, it needs to be protected.
Yeah. If you pinpoint the emotion that you got from that.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know. Like, probably one, like, wonder.
Yeah.
You know, or that's not even an emotion, but, like, just kind of, like, this sense of, like, a bigger world. And also just, like, the repetition, you know, the art of repetition, the art of, like, the song, like, hearing a song for the first time and being like, oh, like that bit repeated and that's all it is, you know, and it's just like the idea of this cycle and it's like, that's really effective and sort of kind of hearing that for the first time, I guess, because I don't know what I would have listened to. I guess you don't hit when you don't understand music, you can't really hear it properly. Right. So it's like before that, it all came together with Buddy Holly, you know, even sadness, you know, there's elements of it's melancholy in there, you know,
massively.
I probably, when I was 2 or 3 years old, I didn't know what that was, but it's just like already like, just like, and then you hear it now and it's actually quite a sad song.
Yeah.
As you grow older, it gets sadder and sadder.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Totally.
You know, which is crazy.
It's so strange that so many guests on this podcast, when asking that question, their go-to memory is the back of their parents' car. And it's many people's like musical knowledge and where they got their music was literally en route on holidays and things like that, just like consuming.
Yeah, it's like, well, my generation was like the tape, the CD, the CD and tape boom in the cars.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like boom time.
It's so strange because I never really sort of consider what my choices would be for these questions. And I've often thought about this one and musical memories when chatting to guests. And I've done like 400 of these shows now, Jimmy. And,
wow.
And it's so weird that you've just mentioned that track, because it literally just sparked something in my head that the first time I think I ever got moved by music was in the back of my parents' car. The first time I heard True Love Waits by Buddy Holly. And I was sometimes we cry and I was thinking, oh my God, this is really sad. And being so young, not and actually computing it.
Yeah.
And as you say, as you get older, you start to process it and realise, oh God, that's even more harrowing than I initially thought it was.
I know. It's like pretty brutal when you actually realise what you're singing about.
Absolutely.
You know, oh my God. It's just like we're basically sort of saying, might as well give up now.
Yeah, knock it on the head. So where was growing up?
Growing up was with my mum and my sister outside of Henley-on-Thames, just like in the countryside, nice. In a little tiny little village. Very, very small, innocent upbringing for a while. And then like moved closer to Oxford when I was like 10 years old. And then, you know, like a bigger school and all of that. Yeah. And way more influence from everything. Yeah. But yeah, pretty sheltered for the first
good,
10.
Right? Happy?
Yeah, loved it. Yeah, amazing. Like, absolutely loved it. You know, what's not to love about that? Yeah. You know, it was safe. I had like two best friends living in this village, and I would just go out on my bike. We'd go to school together. We'd hang out. We'd go on our bikes all day out in the countryside. No problems. You know, one of us would fall off occasionally, you know, and that was it really. Yeah. And then like, you know, they'd just literally bang the saucepan for dinner. And you know, it's like, it sounds insane now, but like, yeah. It was lovely. And I thank my mother for taking me away from a city or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because it was lovely.
Was it a musical household?
My sister played piano. There was a piano. This one.
Nice.
My great-great-grandmother, Jeannie Stefani from Italy. That's her piano. Yeah, yeah. I got it restored. But that's the one. Yeah, that's the one I grew up with. Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's so nice. It's right behind me. Yeah, it's like the most important instrument. I think like nothing would have happened if it wasn't for that. Which was just my mum just like putting it in the house, and it's like you just start plinking on it when you're a kid. And my sister's a couple of years older, so she got piano lessons, and so it was like every night was her butchering like the I think it was like the piano soundtrack.
Yeah,
something. It's like months. It was like 6 months till she got that into like decent shape. But then it was amazing, you know. Yeah. And then it's just that. And mum were like always, there's just always music. I think it was just cassettes, you know, and like just like every music was so portable, you know. It was like, you know, I remember walking around the house just listening to like the Lion King soundtrack constantly, just all day, you know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So there was a lot of music. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Well, let's stay in the formative years for the next track. And can you tell me, please, Jimmy, the song that reminds you of your time at school?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was difficult because I had to pick a time at school.
Oh, you can have some honourable mentions. If there's some other times that you want to get some shout-outs in, then you can as well.
All right, yeah, I will. I'll slip a couple in for this one so I don't offend anyone. But I would say, well, yeah, so this is going back to what must have been like 12, 13. Anyway, it's Paradise City by Guns N' Roses. And I mean, it was the first album I ever owned because my sister got it for me from Boots or Smiths or whatever. And she only got it because it said like parental advisory on it. She thought it was cool. She thought I'd appreciate it, which I did. I was like, yeah, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen or heard. You know, it was so like badass. And then I remember there was just a picture and the Appetite for Destruction inlay of them just all with like bandanas and aviators, like leaning on like a Budweiser keg.
Yeah.
And it looks ridiculous now. You know, it's like, oh, but at the time it was like unreal. Anyway, and then this song is just great because it's just like one big sort of build up to this one bit where the whistle blows and it goes ape shit. And it's wicked. It's so simple. It's pretty, you know, dumbass in a way, but like, I still love Slash as a guitar player. Yeah. I think he's absolutely amazing. And it's like some of the rhythms he plays, like the counter rhythms, just all that stuff is like, I just soaked it up because it's just never heard anything like it. There's one bit in it where he switches the rhythm on the riff he's playing and it's just crazy. You know, like, what are you doing? Anyway, and there was one time on like the school bus where like we always used to play it. We had a really cool bus driver called Ratty who used to just chain smoke cigarettes. And I'm sure he's probably dead now. I mean, he wasn't far from it. That like 20 years ago, whenever that was, probably longer. No. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Longer. Anyway. Yeah. And we all like, we waited for the whistle bit and we all went absolutely ballistic on the school bus. And like the whole thing nearly rolled over and like Ratty went ape shit again. I don't know. It's just really cool. Really exciting. Used to sort of dream about like this place, like LA and like, you know, the troubadour and all this crazy hair metal stuff that was going on. Like, well, you know, that was all earlier than when I heard it. But like, it was amazing. Yeah, it's like music from another land.
I think it's really weird. I think like Guns N' Roses get a bit of a tough rap in some respects because I think they get sort of thrown in with your Poisons and your Motley Crues and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think obviously when
bollocks,
it is they weren't
so much
like
better
that.
Songwriters.
Yeah.
They've got like genuinely great songs. They don't have to be played like heavy.
Yeah.
And I reckon like if they'd broken up after Appetite for Destruction, they would have been like one of the most revered bands of all time.
Yeah.
Like it's that's
a great shout. That is that would definitely have been the case.
It's like I think just because they were, I mean, they dressed like everybody else. I mean, I thought they were a bit cooler looking actually, but like. You know, they were definitely the best songwriters out of all that lot. You know, almost as good as Iron Maiden, who would get the honourable mention.
Oh, okay. Go on, pick a track.
Man. Fear of the Dark, it'll have to be. I know it's a bit, that's the only one I can pull right out there. I mean, there's some deep cuts, which if only I could remember their names. Yeah. But so there was that. That was a tiny bit later, but that was like the British equivalent.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. That was cool. That was kind of funnier though, in a way. It was all like, it was a different vibe.
Yeah.
Like,
but it was,
when
surely as a kid though, and you look at like Eddie and all the covers and that, it was like super exciting as a kid, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You're just there. Yeah. It's amazing. It's like mythology, you know, you're just like, wow. Like these people, they look like fucking He-Man and shit. You know, it's like, they look like, I guess maybe kids look at like the Avengers these days. Mm. Like I used to look at Iron Maiden. But the Avengers can't fucking play Rock and Rio, can they?
No, they can't.
No, to like a million people, I think it was, or something like that. Yeah, it's an insane amount.
Yeah. How was school? Was it something you enjoyed?
Oh, yeah, it was all right. I went to private school, so there weren't any girls, there was a girls' school nearby, which was okay. So there weren't no girls, but like, I always think about that, and I'm just like, that sucks. I was like, thanks. You know, thanks for like hindering me, you know, at university. Definitely I came to university just like fucking like Harry Potter. But yeah, it was a great school, man. It was like, you know, there was a good music school. It was Abingdon School. I went to a bunch of good schools, but you know, it's weird there. It's like the emphasis is very much on like sport and like achievement. And if you're sort of middle of the road and everything like I was, you just get sort of swept aside a little bit. So it was like, it was all right, you know, super competitive. But I swear it's like I hate competitiveness.
Yeah,
I hate it. I loathe it, and I think it put me off it for life.
Did you know what you wanted to do when you was at school?
No. Oh, I wanted to be a marine biologist.
Right.
But I mean, I like loved Attenborough. He was like my absolute hero. Still is, actually. My chemistry teacher took me to one side and was like, "You'll never be a marine biologist. Like, you're terrible at biology."
Thanks, mate.
he was just like, "I've got to be honest with you because it's heartbreaking." You know, he's like, "You don't have a mathematical mind. Like, He's like, "Absolutely no way."
Yeah.
So the only way I've consoled myself. It's like I've just got to try and get like uber rich so I can buy my way onto like a research vessel, like a Steve Zissou sort of thing. I can finance it.
Yeah.
So it was the choice between geography or art, really. And I'd already joined a band actually then, so that was starting to happen. But I mean, like, never did I think that it would be like a job.
So you was quite a creative kid then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was already like writing songs and stuff, like little ones.
But surely, I'm always interested. When I set this podcast up, I set it up initially to base it on certain areas and how the area that you grew up in. Coming from Essex, like the weight of the Prodigy and Depeche Mode and things like that hangs so heavy on sort of aspiring bands in our area. And so I just wondered, like, being so close to Oxford, and I'm sure you've answered millions of questions about Oxford bands and things like that over the years, like, but was there, like, when you saw Ride or you know, Supergrass and obviously Radiohead and things like that, did it never sort of make you think, oh, if they can do it, we can do it?
I didn't know any of those bands at school. Mm. I knew Radiohead because they went to my school, but not when I was there. But like, there was this weight of Radiohead that was like, you have to like Radiohead.
Sure.
So I didn't. I never listened to them. I was just like, I actually turned down tickets to they played this big concert in South Park in Oxford, which is kind of legendary. Mm. It's like, I think, pretty much the best show that ever happened in Oxford. And I turned down tickets to it, which like a few years later when I was massively into Radiohead, it was like, oh, I was like listening to the bootleg. I'm like, you idiot. Definitely. As soon as I found out about all those bands, it was like, oh, shit. Time to up the game a little bit. I didn't realise Oxford was quite so influential, you know.
But you mentioned that the school had a good music department. So was that side of your interest being supported and encouraged?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I wouldn't say encouraged. I'm not sure. Like, they'd allow you to, like, yeah, you could have band practice. You know, they didn't really like it, but you could have band practice.
Yeah.
And there were, like, amplifiers and, you know, it was cool. Like, they were definitely supportive of that. Like, and I think, like, sort of Radiohead as well. Like, I think there was some crossover with some teachers. And I think, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like, if, you know, I feel like in a school like that, you know, like you're so far down the ladder in the music department anyway, even though that's fantastic, you know, and the classical stuff's always pretty amazing and there's like a theatre hall and stuff. Still, I feel like, you know, you were not taken as seriously. So I feel like when a music teacher sees like any like flicker of talent, they're going to like protect it with all they've got because it will, you know, it will help them out as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if they saw any talent with me, but not back
in,
then.
Not we, in marine biology. Like,
No. God.
I'd like to know, for track four, please, Jimmy, the first song you were buying from a record store.
Oh, yeah. I'll narrow this down. This is like the first 7-inch, the first like record I ever bought, like vinyl. It's Golden Brown by The Stranglers. And I bought it in Whitby, at a little record store. No idea if it's still there. And I heard it. You know, I'd always associate The Stranglers with being like these kind of like leery, like sort of oi oi kind of like UK punk. You know, and then I was just like, I was like, because I saw it, I was like, I don't know that song, Golden Brown. I was like, I didn't know that was the Stranglers. It was just like, oh my God, and just made it so wonderful. I like, put it on and I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, and again, that's a perfect song. That was it. Yeah, we were listening to that in the dressing room in Newcastle, yeah. And that, I was like, that's a perfect song.
Yeah.
It's a car. I wouldn't change anything about it.
It's a wonderful. Mad record, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's just like, it's obviously just like a real fleeting, like, burst of imagination they had in the studio. I don't know anything about the making of it, but this is when I find out that it's like a cover.
No, I'm sure it's not.
But it's just I love those songs. It's like every day I love these special songs that just seem to like occupy an entire world on their own.
Yeah.
And that's another one, you know, and it's obviously like got intriguing lyrics that everyone likes to guess about, and it's all just like really cool.
It's weird, isn't it?
If Heroin was a song, you know, it's like that and like Perfect Day or anything by Lou Reed. You know, it's like, you know.
And it's really weird that you mention like Golden Brown as being a perfect song, because it doesn't sound like anything else the Stranglers ever done. And I often sort of had this conversation when people mention certain songs that are super famous songs but don't sound like anything else them bands have done. And they're the ones that, for me, How Soon Is Now doesn't sound like anything else the Smiths ever done. That's pretty damn perfect. Yeah. Fool's Gold don't sound like anything else the Stone Roses done. And that's a fucking mental record.
Yeah, that's what I mean, man. There's just like these bursts of like fucking perfection that people go through.
Yeah.
Where it all becomes clear. I think it's probably like that artist reaching like the absolute apex of their creativity, you know, and it's just like the end product is like a little diamond, isn't it? After all this like heat and work, and it's just like this perfect, like you've just made the perfect song, you know.
Yeah,
definitely all those ones you said, like they're all perfect songs. You know, you wouldn't touch them, you wouldn't go anywhere near them.
100% Well, let's talk about record stores for just a little bit. And were they important places you know, as your taste developing music, and you was getting further and further into bands, and what's your relationship with, like, you know, the independence now, you know, as a band?
Well, of course, it was really important. Like, I got really into vinyl. I still am. So it was like, you know, growing up and like going, there were some good record stores in Oxford, like Massive Records on Gloucester Green, but they all closed, unfortunately. But then another one opened up recently, fairly recently, Truck Records, which is great. And I feel like that seems to have happened across the UK a little bit, and America, where it's like, where there would be like five record stores, which were all pretty good, but like, you know, maybe a bit frustrating, you know, the usual kind of, certainly when you go in, there's like, you know, like, you know, 150 Elvis bootlegs and then like some like 70s stuff that looks scary and like something like your parents would listen to, you know, something you'd find in the loft.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's so rubbish, you know? And then, but these days, I feel like they've all been like compiled into one record store, which is actually really amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, whichever ones are left, there's never been better record stores anywhere, you know? It's like, so, and we still try and support them, you know? We try and do like special editions, like for Asai Records in Edinburgh. They do like a cool, like Japanese, it looks like a Japanese import thing. We did loads of stuff for them. So, and Banquet Records, and Rough Trade in stores. Like, it's great. Like, you know, and I'm really glad that, like, you know, music may be changing and maybe becoming way more of a sort of shit show.
Yeah.
And you know, who knows what's going to happen, but like, at least people are buying records. At least the romance side of things is picking up, and same with record stores. I feel like the ones that are around and they're doing well, I think.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Let's take your club in for track five. And
the
song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, please, Jimmy.
Well, I'll do the honourable mention first, because I feel like I would say Born Slippy by Underworld here, because that's sort of like that I heard that as a kid, and it's, if I hear it now, it still makes me want to go like bananas.
I had Darren Emerson on last week who wrote that, and
it's so good. I think it's overlooked because of its
that's an intro.
Yeah, that's a massive. Yeah, exactly. If that intro doesn't make you want to go clubbing, right?
Yeah.
Then you're not right.
Yeah, totally.
but that's the honourable mention, and that would be that, you know, the euphoric night out soundtrack definitely would be that. But I will say, if, you know, more related to the band, I would say Plumbercon by Mono Lake, yeah. which is I don't think anyone's ever heard of it. I certainly hadn't. And it's like, it's proper minimal techno is what it is. So it does exactly what it says on the tin. And it was really, you can definitely hear elements of Foles in it, I think, yeah. because it was one of those things we almost studied in the early, like the formative year of Foles. And we were like, let's try and do something like this on guitar. And it's all like the polyrhythms, but then like the gaps in between the beats that you're hearing anyway. I don't know. It's like, how simple can you make something that still gives off loads of energy? I feel like it's like, and that's very much in our DNA. So yeah. And it's like, and it, you know, on a cracking sound system, like somewhere in Berlin or something, like that song sounds amazing. And if you're stimulated enough, you can. It's incredible. It sounds like alien music or something. I don't know.
Was clubbing something that you was big on?
Sort of. I've got an on-off relationship with dancing. I don't really like it. I've sort of come to terms with it now, and I just think I just don't like it. I get too embarrassed. But it's certainly like late night in a nightclub. I've thrown caution to the wind. And I've massively loved it. So I understand it. I've had some amazing nights. Like at on tour and stuff, when we play festivals, some of them have got like full blown nightclubs inside the festival, like Glastonbury and Coachella and all these places. So it's like, seems to create like Underworld, I've seen them loads of times. And it's just amazing. It's like, oh man. Yeah. So, but not hot on the dancing, to be honest.
Well,
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
That kind of brings me on to the next thing, really, which is, you say that you're a bit self-conscious dancing and things like that. Like, tell me about your relationship with confidence, because you walk on stage in front of fucking shitloads of people. You're going to get looking at you throwing a few shapes on a nightclub floor. What's your relationship with confidence?
Oh, it's so weird, man. I'm just trying to figure it out. it's all gone. We played these shows. We were back on tour, and I've been thinking about doing that for so long. And I'm just like, and it was so, I don't know. It was really easy, and I've got loads of confidence. And I'm just like, what? I thought it'd be the other way around. I don't know, man. Like, yeah, I certainly, it's much harder to play with fewer people. We're in a small room with people really watching you. That I feel like that is scarier than it's more abstract when it's massive. I really like huge shows because it's like you can sort of save yourself in the atmosphere. I don't know what it is. And obviously small shows, you can just close your eyes and just dine off the energy in a small show. That's easy as well. I don't know, because I'm not like confident at all, really.
What about
a fan told me off the other day for like not being like not realizing how big the shows were or something. I was just like, I was just knackered. I was just really tired. I was just like, I don't know. I was like, I don't know what's going on. I was not confident as a kid. I was very shy. Okay. Very, very shy. I was very shy up until I joined Foles, actually. And then And then they put a rocket up my ass, whether I liked it or not. And that was the end of that. They lit the fuse and stood well back.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Okay, track six. I'm going to take you home. Favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Well, it's got to be Let Down by Radiohead.
That's a beauty,
which
isn't it?
Which is probably my favourite song of all time. That's a tough competition, but I think. And it's just, again, back of dad's car. But this time, like, not listening to what dad was listening to my own stuff on headphones. Yeah. And I can remember it now, going up this hill, and I'd heard it before, but it was just that one listen.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect song again.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful. And it's just, they opened up this world and that this door to another flipping world, basically. Yeah. And I just put one leg in and that's it. Yeah. Again, I don't know if that hadn't happened. Would I be here now? But I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. It was that inspirational. Like it's really like it makes me basically want to cry when I hear it because it's gaining more and more meaning, you know, just because of what it did to me. I love it. Yeah. And it's such a beautiful song.
Oh, it's an absolute cracker, mate. We just touched on confidence there. And also I want to touch on something else now that you know, Foles have been smashing it for years now. And that's not an easy thing to do in the music industry. That's a tough industry to maintain the levels of success that yous have.
Yeah.
Tell me about Drive.
Well, man, you've got to ask Yanis about that.
Okay. I'm asking you. I want to know your relationship with Drive.
I'm driven.
Yeah.
I'm driven, definitely. Like, you know, like these eternal struggles, like trying to write the perfect pop song or play the perfect live show. You know, we're not perfectionists. We're not going like, we're not like Rain Man.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, but like still, it's like, it's like, there's always stuff that could be done better.
Yeah.
And it's like, in fact, actually, I don't know, like this tour feels different. It feels like we've kind of like, it all feels like it's come together finally in a crazy way, like with this new light show. But like, I mean, Yanis is the most driven person I've ever met.
Yeah.
And he still is, basically. He's still like flipping. He has so much coffee. I don't know how he does it. I just don't know how he does it. I don't have the same energy levels.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy to let stuff go by, float on by. I'm like, nah, I can't be bothered with that. And they're like, but it's this much money. I'm like, where is it? I'm like, nah. Like, that sounds shit. You know, I don't care how much money. And then it's like, I end up playing it and I'm like, fuck. Well, you know, whatever. Now they know because they're on the email.
You've got to save all the money you can, mate. You've got to do your marine biology course. You've got to buy your way onto that.
No, I know. How am I going to get on the research vessel in the Galapagos Island? Exactly. I'm trying to live within my means until I can blow it all on that.
Wonderful. All right, yeah, it's your last track, mate. That last track, this is when you get to play Tastemaker, or as the youth call it, Influencer.
Is it? Oh dear!
Yeah, you made it, mate. You're an influencer.
This is a weird influencer. Then,
can you tell me a song that you think many people haven't heard that you would like them to hear, please, mate?
Yeah, well, this song, you know, this is quite a long list of songs. I feel like because these are the songs I really love. Well, I mean, I can only think of two. Well, the one I've written down, the honourable mention would be this guy, Julian Lynch, and this song called Rancher. And it's just like this super weird little song. Beautiful, lovely little song. So everyone should listen to that. I think you can get it on iTunes, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Or Spotify, whatever, you know, other horrible thing we used to listen to music on. Anyway, but the winner of this week... is a Wild Pack of Family Dogs by Modest Mouse. And you know, Modest Mouse are a weird band. I think some people don't like them because they're a bit too weird. Maybe people are quite hard to put their finger on what it actually is that makes Modest Mouse so good. But this I feel like is a perfect little window into Isaac the singer's mind. And it's such a weird little song, and it's absolutely packed with meaning and imagery, you know. And it's just, you know, I struggle with listening to lyrics. Like when I hear music for the first time, I find like the lyrics sort of come in like a week later. once I've sort of gorged on the music, then the lyrics are like the pudding, you know. But with this, I was just like, you know, the imagery of he's talking about this, you know, once he dies, these dogs floating up to the glowing sky. And it's all just this like death, like there's a lot, so much death and like mystery and like hardship and remorse and wonder in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It might not even be 2 minutes. I think it might be on minute 30 or something. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, if you can do that, then, you know, you're just like, I respect you. You know, I respect that stuff just the most. Like, you know, I love like folk music and people who just play on their own. It's like I admire stand-up comedians in the same way. It's just like, wow, like that is like the pinnacle of entertainment in a sense. Anyway, yeah, it's just a wonderful, weird little song, and I'm so glad it exists, you know.
Well, Jimmy, we put together a playlist to accompany the podcast with all your choices on, and we throw your honorable mentions on there, and obviously we put some foul stuff on there as well.
As
the rest of this year is gathering pace quickly, and it's far more connected, and we appear to be saying goodbye to a pandemic, however you want to view that. But we're seeing festivals, gigs, and everything returning to some kind of normality, which is lovely. What are you looking forward to from the rest of this year personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Well, they're both tied together.
Every musician says that.
Well, it is, isn't it? There isn't, because it's not like a job, but it is sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, personally, you know, well, I'm looking forward to seeing my girlfriend again, because she just got on the plane like yesterday, and I won't see her for 3 months. So, you know, I can't wait to get back to California and get a house or rent a house and further my life over there. I cannot wait. That's the dream. And in order to achieve the dream, I have to put coal in the furnace. And that's and then that's touring with the band. But I've got to say, it's just like we've just done 10 shows or something like that. And it's just it's been the best.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to Walter and Edwin. And there's been some enormous highlights, but I've never felt so good. And it's just like the energy is great. And we've got Glastonbury coming up, which is definitely my highlight of the year anyway. So the fact that we've got a very nice slot as well, the one I've always wanted, it's flipping serendipity, man. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I'm looking forward to that every show we've got in the calendar. I feel like we're going to just blow the lid off most places, because I don't know what's going on at the moment. Because we've been lying on our sofas for 2 years. We've got all this energy.
100%.
It's like, come see us while we've got energy. We'll be knackered next year.
Oh, lovely. Jimmy, it's been a real pleasure talking records with you, mate. Thanks loads for your time.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it, man. It's great.
Thank you so much. We'll put the episode out soon. And if people want to keep up the speed with everything that's happening with files and tour dates, I mean, you ain't got to look too far, right? I don't know why I'm going to ask you to tell me that. It's going to be on all the socials. Good.
Wrong person. Wrong person to ask. I would say head to the website. That's what I tell everybody.
Perfect.
I feel like the website is the most reliable source of information as to what's going on with shows. And there isn't any cancellations anymore.
Lovely.
Which is pretty, pretty nice. We've all been sick of these cancellations.
Absolutely.
Like, everything getting shit canned all the time. So finally, the tour is happening and it's on the website. I don't know what's going on. It feels all new to me.
Mate, I wish you all the best with the tour and the record. And thanks again, Jimmy, for coming on. It's been a real joy chatting tunes with you, mate.
Thanks, man.
What a dude. What a wonderful chat. Like I said, I just finished recording that and just doing the intro and outro straight after pressing stop. Got to talk about some great records, and go check out the Spotify playlist to accompany this chat, and you can listen to all of the songs that Jimmy chose and some of the Foles music, past and present. If you get a chance ever to go and see Foles live, I would recommend, as somebody that has seen them, I would say it's a ruddy lovely night out. Right, I think we're done. Thanks again to Tom for facilitating that chat. And thanks once more to Jimmy. And obviously, much love to you lot. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, go check out the back catalogue. Go check out the Patreon. Go check out the merch. Go check out the social media. It's all one click once you head over to offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Everything you need to know. It's your one-stop shop. Right, love you lots. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.